Hello, everyone. I'm Corey.
I'm Kate.
I'm Alec.
And this is the Youtini Avatar Show, proud partner of the Youtini Network. We are discussing Avatar, The Last Airbender, the new live-action show on Netflix. Now, this week, we are diving into the heart of Episode 5. We're exploring the power plays within the Fire Nation, the haunting trauma of Katara's past, Aang's spiritual guidance from Gyatso, and the blending of humor with the spirit world's mysteries. Thanks for hanging out with us, and be sure to leave us a review wherever you get your podcast if you like what you hear. Now, before we get into this week's conversation, we have to thank our sponsor, the United Patreon Community. Head over to patreon.com/utini to hear everything that our community has to offer. Please stay tuned for more details about what we do over on Patreon later in the show. All right, friends, let's hit it. Now, I want to dive into, right out the gate, just my kind of gut reaction to this episode was that I loved it. I was a huge fan of this Spirit World episode. And, you know, it shouldn't have worked. It really shouldn't have worked. I don't know why it worked so well, but they obviously took several different Spirit World episodes from the animated show and kind of crammed them all into one. Mm-hmm. And I think this is probably my favorite episode so far, which is interesting. I don't think the internet felt quite as the same about that as I do, but I loved this episode. What about you guys? Were you as big a fan of this as I was?
I would definitely say yes, because this was just beautifully done.
Yeah. 100%. Alec, what about you?
Oh, yeah, man. I really, really enjoyed the episode. My notes are extensive. I will say I didn't write quite as intricate of notes because I think we're just going to have so much to talk about today.
Yeah.
You know, that we probably won't even have time to get into a lot of the things that we would want to.
I know. This episode really did have a lot of stuff, and most notably the inclusion of multiple Spirit World episodes from the animated show. But before we get to the Spirit World, which is going to be a huge conversation topic for this episode, I do want to talk about the royal family, the Fire Nation.
The royal family.
Yes.
Such a good time to talk about it.
It is such a good time to talk about the royal family. Let's talk about this scene between Ozai and Azula. And I think this is a decent jumping off point to something we were talking about a little bit before we hit record on this episode. Ozai and Azula, their relationship in this show is different than it was in the animated show. In the animated show, we're sort of meant to believe that Azula is this kind of manipulative, powerful person. In some ways, she's kind of in charge, and we see her sort of become unhinged as the show kind of goes on. But in the live action show, it's Ozai. Ozai is the manipulator, the narcissist, the sort of psychopath leader. And this opening scene that we got between the two of them was very interesting. The dialogue was pretty rich, and we get to kind of see inside the mind's eye of the evil manipulator Ozai. And I wanted to ask you guys, how does this sort of portrayal of Ozai's manipulative tactics towards Azula and Zuko, even, we're now starting to get a little bit of this, how does this enhance and kind of change our understanding of, like, Ozai's sort of motivation, his internal conflict? Who is Ozai? What are your thoughts about that, Alec?
Yeah, I think with characters like this, it's hard to see whether or not they care about their kids, you know, like, or is literally just everything a game to them, you know, like the kid, like, they have kids just to create new pawns in their chess game, you know,
is
kind of how it feels. Like, I don't know if there's really any compassion there, and I think that, you know, getting to see this much of the Fire Lord and the way that he deals with his kids is a great little addition. I think it really kind of helps round out some of the character development for both of them, and it really helps us understand, you know, and especially later in some of the scenes that we know that we'll get to see before this season ends. We finally kind of get to see and understand Azula's mentality during all of this, and she's not just, you know, a crazy sister.
Yeah,
you know, but
some sort of pursuit of perfection clearly comes from her father.
She's
issues,
like a puppeted,
right?
You know,
her daddy issues.
Character,
that's right?
Right, like everything that she's doing is just a direct reflection of the manipulation that Ozai is creating.
What about you, Kate? What do you think about Ozai?
I've worked with too many parent-child dynamics that, like, this is This is how it goes, man. This is pretty spot on. You see parents and they've lived their own lives. So obviously Ozai was once a child and his childhood must not have been very good because he turned out the way he was. Or maybe it was too good. Maybe he was babied. I don't know. But this dynamic of a narcissistic parent with their children, I see it a lot. The parents think that their children are an extension of themselves. So Zuko and Azula's success and their actions are an extension of Ozai, and he gets really angry and upset when they don't reflect well. So he is training them to reflect himself.
Pitting them against each other a little bit. And
using
that as a storytelling device to kind of set Azula off. Like, we're starting to get glimpses of that. Like, there's a moment where she's training later on, and we see a hint of the blue fire, by the way. Did you guys
Yes.
Know?
Oh, yeah.
We got a hint of the blue fire later on, and what's Ty Lee, is that her name? She says, "Everyone knows you're perfect, Azula." And she goes, "It's not good enough."
So I actually read something online that the blue fire is actually the tears and depression from Azula. I thought that was an interesting theory.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Are we going to get to see her shoot lightning in this season, you think?
I don't know if we'll see lightning. To me, when I see blue fire, I think of like a concentrated heat. Yeah. You know, like this, extra like hot. When I see the blue fire, I see someone who's like blinded by rage.
Yeah.
Interesting. Now, this is not the first time in Fire Nation history, if you will. We've seen some pretty weird, sick, narcissist, gross stuff between, you know, this really messed up family. We were talking a little bit before the show in last episode. I think we got it wrong a little bit because we were talking about Ozai and Azula and Zuko and kind of some of the family dynamics with Iroh. And we were like, how is Iroh the older brother and not the heir? And we like totally forgot about this huge story moment in the animated show, which happened kind of quickly. And you know, I thought this would be a fun little thing to discuss briefly in case, you know, any of our listeners, you guys were like us and forgot that this whole thing happened. Like, there's a huge plot point in the original show about how that happened, how Iroh was not the heir and Ozai was. And if you guys remember, we were reading a little bit on the Avatar fandom wiki right before we hit record. There's a plot point where Ozai goes to Azulon, their father, and says, "Now that Lutin is dead, right? Iroh's son is dead. You know, the bloodline is dead. You should give me the Fire Lord status inheritance instead." And Azulon is like super pissed that Ozai came to him about that and demands.
This is not tradition.
Yes, yep. He said, "This is not tradition. How dare you, in the face of Iroh's loss, how dare you demand, you know, his inheritance, basically, right? Like, how dare you?" And Azulon orders Ozai to kill Zuko, like his firstborn son. He's like, "Oh, you're going to feel the pain of losing your firstborn son." So he orders him to kill him. And Zuko's mom sort of gets word of that and demands that Ozai, "No, we can't kill Azulon. Nobody else knows about this except for you and me."
Well, Ozai was going to do it.
Yes, Ozai was going to do it, right? And so Zuko's mom, Ursa, goes to Ozai and they come up with this plot, and it's like kind of heavily implied that they kill him. They kill Azulon. They kill the Fire Lord, right?
Before they kill their firstborn son.
Yes, before they kill Zuko. And like they say that on Azulon's deathbed, basically, he demanded that Ozai get the, you know, get thrown, which was a crazy turn of events.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know how we forgot about this. This is in one paragraph in the page about Azulon and his death. I totally forgot about this. This was in the animated show.
But this adds the depth to the show now of why Azula and Zuko are fighting, or why Azula is so competitive for the throne. Because it's possible now that the youngest child can inherit the throne.
Yes, it's now it's up in the air. Now it's implied that like Ozai, he can decide.
He gets decide to choose. Yeah,
and I guess he's probably raised Azula and Zuko with that knowledge.
Probably.
Like they have to compete with each other.
100%.
The better one gets the throne, right? Yep. So I loved that moment. The reason we wanted to bring that up is because like I think it adds a ton of depth to this scene. Now having that background knowledge, kind of about what the deal is. I love the line that Ozai says too. He's like, "I expect That's what I expect of my children, not self-serving flattery and coy whispers.
Even though that's exactly what he did to his father.
Exactly. I love that. That was rich.
Yeah, he says, Zuko discovered the Avatar. That's what I expect of a future heir.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's like he's just going to continue to push her as hard as he can. I mean, we haven't even seen yet in the show what happened with Zuko and his father, but if it's anything like the animated show, it'll be, you know, the War Council meeting where mm-hmm. Zuko speaks up about what he thinks the strategy should be, you know, and that's all it took for his dad to be like, you don't have discipline and I'm going to teach you a lesson. And then that kind of sets that whole story arc. So I assume that it'll be very similar, if not the same exact thing. I don't know why they would change that, but
I don't know. We'll see. I feel like I trust the writers so mm-hmm. far with the depiction of Ozai. So however they decide to, you know, make Ozai decide that he's going to burn the crap out of
Zuko. Yeah.
However they decide that. We've already seen the scene, right? They've already shown it a little bit, right? So, but we don't know really what arrived at that yet. And mm-hmm. you don't find it out until much later in the animated show as well. So yeah. Continued awesomeness from the Fire Nation. Definitely, in my opinion,
drama.
Yes, definitely, in my opinion, the highlight of this show so far. But let's transition now and talk a little bit about the sort of main meat of this episode, which was called Spirited Away. I don't know how that's not a copyright violation using that as the title, considering that is another title of a film. Let's talk about the spirit world. Now, like I said in the opening of the show, we crammed together a whole bunch of spirit world episodes kind of into one episode. And it really worked for me. You guys said it worked for you mm-hmm. as well. Let's talk about how we got to the spirit world. The forest was burned, right? Forest was burned. When I first watched the episode, that actually kind of bothered me a little bit because it looked like such a small piece of forest. I watched a YouTube video that had the animated show side by side with it. It's almost mm-hmm. the exact same shape and exact same size and everything. Yeah. It wasn't a very big part of the forest, actually. So, you know, I was wrong about that.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Well, it's just like it's as wide as the column of Fire Nation troops, I guess is what we're supposed to think, right? Because they only the phrasing in the show is that they burned it to make their walk through the forest easier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a similar storyline too, to arrive in the spirit world. You know, I like that it took some effort to get to the spirit world this time. You know, the first time we see it happen, he just goes and meditates at Kyoshi's temple, right? Mm-hmm. But this time it took some effort, right? They had to go out into the forest. They had to find.
Had to concentrate.
Yeah. They had to find the shrine. I was a big fan of that. What do you guys think about the trueness, I guess, to the original with this being. This is kind of hard to achieve. This is one of those things that I think was probably a writing challenge a little bit to get to the spirit world because it doesn't work as well in live action, I think. Yeah, it took some efforts. What do you guys think about how we got there? The lens of the story was the village and the children, and something bad is happening here was one of the lines that they mentioned. And then we arrive and we meet the bear spirit. We meet the spirit of the forest. What were your sort of gut reactions, your feelings around, you know, our depiction of getting to the spirit world? Kate?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about because I thought it was done really well. So, like, I'm a little confused.
The original show had a lot of episodes that kind of felt like one-offs. And, you know, some of them end up tying back together. You know, like Teo and Sai was kind of like a one-off style episode that then tied back in later, you know, and they found a new place for it here in this show. And I think that putting all the Spirit World episodes together kind of, you know, we get a hint at the end of this that we're going to end up kind of doing the winter solstice story arc here, which I think is interesting to me because I don't know if they're going to set up the same timeline with the comet that they did in the show or, you know, how is that going to work? So them putting all the spirit world together here works for me. Again, I think this is another example of how they just kind of keep rewriting things in a way that somehow works. Even in my brain, it doesn't feel like it should, but it does, and I really appreciate it. So, you know, getting to see Heibei, working through that, I think, you know, we'll get into it here in a little bit, but I think the character of Heibei is done very differently. I think this is an episode that we can all agree that the the spirit world, the creatures inside the spirit world. It's so freaking beautiful. It almost makes me mad that we didn't get to see Flopsy last episode because the creatures in this in this episode look so dang good that I feel like Flopsy, let's go straight to that too.
Let's talk about Haybai. That is the first spirit we're sort of introduced to, at least in the real world, right? Because we see a statue, of course, and I liked that the camera lingered on the kind of claw thing on his face, and then Aang noticed that later on.
They do it perfectly, just like the show. We don't know what happened to the forest. We know it's been burned, and then we meet the villagers, and the villagers say, hey, we've had people go missing.
Yep.
And that was exactly like the show.
Yep.
And it was very subtle in this episode, but we notice that the little girl's brother disappeared.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, it wasn't, you know, Haybai, I guess in this show, because they don't really show it, but like Haybai still taking people at night or something, maybe. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
They don't really say exactly how it works. You know, but Aang ends up in the spirit world with Sokka. And I still like, you know, we get these little like moments of funny, humorous laughter with Sokka. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, we show up and Aang sees the owl, and later he's like, what did the owl say? And he's like, the owl said that we'd have to face our truth. And he's like, oh, I can deal with that. I can deal with the truth. I mean, how hard can the truth be? You know, like, I love these little scenes. I think this...
Is that a frog or a frog thingy?
What a line. Sokka did such a great job in the spirit world of, like, being Sokka.
He was jumpy. I love how jumpy he was.
Yeah, I think this is becoming my favorite actor and my favorite portrayal of a character. I know from some of the interviews I've seen with him that he is... he does probably the only real, he just kind of does his own thing. Like he'll follow the script, but he'll also do some improv. Mm-hmm. So I really like this character. I know I'm kind of getting away from our topic, but I just wanted to say I really like Sokka.
No, Sokka was really fun.
I think this is a good episode for him. But yeah, the spirit world looked pretty cool, and us getting to start with the sage and the owl. That's like one of the coolest things I have seen so far in the show, I think, is that giant owl. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's talk about the big birdie or whatever.
The big birdie.
Giant birdie. Or is like, what did you call me? Yeah, that was pretty goofy. Actually, that might be my flying cow. Actually, I thought that was really goofy. Like that, they were like, they're too simple to understand me. And then it flips back to them, they're going, oh,
I loved it.
I thought it was so good.
I was like, that had to be a trippy experience with Katara and Sokka for sure. What's the guy's name? The big owl. What's his name?
I just call him the Great Sage. I don't know. I think he has like three different names.
I have it in my notes here. Wan Shi Tong.
Yes.
Wan Shi Tong. Yes, the Great Owl. It's sort of implied he's kind of the keeper of knowledge. Although he's not like us. He's not like the spirit of knowledge or anything, as far as I know. I read about him on the wiki yesterday when I was kind of putting together the show notes. And we obviously see him in the animated show in the library episode, right? Like, and he's very angry and pissed off. And if you remember in the library episode, he's specifically mad at General Zhao, like came to learn knowledge about war. Mm-hmm. And he's really mad about war. So he decides he's going to tear down the whole like library because they keep using knowledge for like harm and bad. And it's interesting to get a completely different version of that spirit, I think, in this show. But I think it worked.
Yeah, I think we'll see him come back again as a guide from time to time. You know, they might use him as like a narration point or, you know, something to kind of help us understand pieces of the spirit world. But I think them using him in this role it works well, and I they'll probably end up using it again.
Yeah, big fan of the voice too of the spirit of Wan Shi Tong. He was kind of deep. Scary. It was intimidating, I think, for sure. Like, you know, I love that. I love the line too that you have to stay on the path, and then later on, they're like, "We got to just stay on the path," and they're like, "Nope, get off the path,
run."
That was really, really good.
Scatter.
I also wanted to briefly talk about Haybai's. Was that you say that? Haybai.
Yep.
Haybai's sort of angry version of himself too looked fantastic, like straight out of Stranger Things or something.
Yeah,
they even got his coloring right.
Yes. The color, the skin,
like
leathery and gross.
He's both black and white.
Yeah.
That's great.
His teeth. It was very scary. I was like,
Yeah.
I was into it.
Did you think that it was implied that he was creating the fog? I
wanted to ask you guys about that, actually. Yeah.
I thought so. He was breathing it out of his mouth.
Tell us about the fog, Alec, because when we were talking before, you briefly brought up this fog.
And I didn't realize it.
I didn't realize it. What's the fog from?
Okay, so the fog is the fog of lost souls. We really only see it in the Legend of Korra. Tenzin goes in there to, if I remember correctly, I think his kids kind of get lost in there or trapped in there, and he has to go in, and we end up seeing that Commander Zhao is stuck in there, and he accidentally mistakes Tenzin for Aang, and they like have a battle. But yeah, the Fog of Lost Souls is a spirit in itself, which I think is interesting because it kind of differs from if Heibei is creating this fog. And mm-hmm. and the Fog of Lost Souls in the show is in like a desert area, and it looks like a valley. Basically, it's like a canyon, mm-hmm. and like in the depths of the canyon is where the fog lives, and it doesn't go above there. So, I think them using it in this sense. So because again, I don't think we ever really get any descriptions of it really in the Avatar show, not until Korra. So I think this is a good use of it. Just another example of how they're kind of pulling different elements of the show and making it work. So I enjoyed it. But I'm still stuck on it if it's coming out of Heibei or not. I guess it
good
is.
Good question. Heibei in the animated show shot this like light beam out of his mouth. Do you guys remember
that? Yeah, it was very Godzilla-esque.
Yeah, it was. It was very Godzilla-esque. But in this show, he obviously vomits up the fog and... Is that what it is? Is it the fog?
Stinky
is it,
breath.
Yeah, maybe it's just
well. It has
fog. Is it the fog?
It has to be the fog. I mean,
Gyatso calls it that.
And Gyatso's been there for like 100 years, so
Yeah.
How you stay sane, in that little shack? I don't know, but
yeah, that was pretty cool. The shout out to Korra too was a great, great way to sort of bring that in. The Fog of Lost Souls. It was scary, too. And let's talk about Ko a little bit. We got Ko as well. Ko was horrifying.
He was terrifying.
Yeah.
His creepy leg sounds and the, awful.
Centipede.
Yeah.
I think this is, it's really interesting to me that Aang hasn't had a chance yet to, get any warning about Ko. He just, Ko's just there all of a sudden. And Aang, he does show emotion, in my opinion, during that. He is frightened and he runs, And Ko doesn't steal his face that way. I think they've really rewritten kind of the dynamic of Ko and the dynamic of Heibei, because in the show, Heibei's stealing people. But in this, it seems it's kind of ambiguous, maybe Heibei's not stealing people. Maybe Heibei's just kind of creating the fog, and then Ko uses the fog to his advantage to steal people.
Yeah, Gyatso says the fog is the hunting ground for
because
Ko, and he says an apex predator or something.
Because the fog makes you relive your worst memory over and over and over again. You're just perpetually in the worst memory you've ever had. And it even changes it a little bit and makes it worse, which we get to see with Katara and Sokka. But yeah, Ko is it looks incredible. We get to see the baboon face. It's super creepy. It's well done. I don't know what
Roku's girlfriend.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was interesting.
Yeah, Roku. It's not Roku. It doesn't say Roku. He says Roku faced him, but a past avatar lost his love. Is it Roku?
No, it's not Roku. It's the water tribe guy, I think, isn't it?
Roku almost bested him, though, is what they imply. That's why we're going to Roku next.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, so we'll get some.
That was a line there. The point is, it sounds like Ko has had multiple experiences with avatars in the past. Mm-hmm. They have a long history of kind of mortal enemy
for
type of
centuries.
Vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's this primordial, been there since the beginning of time kind of character.
Ko is also voiced by George Takei. I don't know if you guys caught that either.
I did not, but that's a great catch.
You did tell me about that.
Yeah, I was like, man, this guy's voice sounds familiar, and I googled it while we were watching it yesterday, and sure enough, it's George Takei.
Yeah, it's so iconic.
It is very iconic. And a lot of the dialogue was very similar to the original. The lines were the same. Mm-hmm. The baboon was there. I was a big fan. And I love the I love the implication that Ko is involved in the visions,
yeah.
like that he's manipulating it. Like we get to see Ko insert himself into the visions. You know what I mean? Like he's the Fire Nation soldier that Katara saw in the tent and or the igloo, and he's the.
I don't think he's the dad, but I think he's the dad's friend in Sokka's vision.
Yeah, he's definitely a Water Tribe guy.
Yeah.
I got very like Lord of the Rings style vibes with like the Sheila like spider web of everything. Like I was expecting like some kind of Frodo scene of him like, you know, getting caught in the webs and trying to get out and using airbending like to you know to like escape the lair and in my head all I could hear is Gollum being like, she's always hungry.
I know
she's always wants to feed.
It's let's be honest. The spider stuff in Lord of the Rings absolutely like set the gold standard for how to depict that type of stuff in movie and TV, like with the web and you know
how fast but how quiet it moves. Yeah. You know, like it's so haunting. And Ko very much gave me those kind of vibes, and I thought that was really well done.
100% agree. Let's talk about the Fog of Lost Souls and what it did for our characters, because both Katara and Sokka had a traumatic memory for both of them, mm-hmm. right? It says that, you know, the fog makes you relive your worst experiences, your worst feelings, your worst nightmares, and obviously that is exactly what we saw, particularly with Katara's very traumatic story. Really well done, I have to say. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about the depiction of Katara's mother's death? It was very horrifying and graphic, and her scream was, man, it gives me kind of chills, and it was scary. What do you think about that?
With how much they've already done, like, they've already torched several people on this show, so I don't think it was actually that graphic in terms of how they've already depicted Fire Nation killing people.
I'm assuming that it's probably not like a super expensive choice, you know, in like post mm-hmm. for them to do those kind of things. So they're you know, when they choose a scene, I mean, we've had some scenes where I felt like they probably didn't need to include it at all in this show, and they probably spent a bunch of money on it. This scene in particular, I think, is not one of those. It didn't bother me. I know that, you know, some of that kind of violence may seem a little unnecessary to some, and I get that, but I think for her character arc and getting to see this, and you know, Katara as a child, she knows that she can waterbend. She is a waterbender, but she has zero real ability at this point, and mm-hmm. she tries to lift the water out of the bucket and like just splashes back down.
Maybe she feels responsible for her death a little bit.
Yeah,
like
I think that's what we're kind of getting implied.
It's kind of implied.
Here.
Yeah. You know, interestingly, I my thought about this is like, why was it so graphic and violent, and why do we see it that way? You know, I saw a comment online that says, why is Katara is talking about her mother a lot in the live action show? I was like, why is she keep bringing up? It's like, well, I get it.
Yeah, there's a lot of trauma there.
And a lot of trauma.
I mean, when
there.
You watch your parent die, why wouldn't, like, I know. Of course that would haunt you.
The other thought that I had that I think kind of works is because we know that this vision is created by Ko, and
yeah.
You know, even though this was a traumatic memory for Katara and she probably remembers it very, very well, you know, I had the thought that I wonder if it's worse and how she relived it was actually worse than how it actually occurred. Like, is it a true memory or is it a bit of a delusion? Like, is it a bit of a, you know, did Ko make the memory worse than it actually was? Like, did she actually waterbend in the real version? Did she actually witness the burn to death? What did Katara's mother actually blood-curdlingly scream and she watched it that way? Or was, you see what I'm saying?
I think this is going to be one of those things, and Kat will probably have some good insight here, but I think for me this is one of those things where, you know, like, you get to see, like, whether or not it actually happened that way, that is now what the audience is going to take from that, right? It's like, it's like when somebody gets accused of something, like, they can never not be accused of that thing. So, like, now, like, we are now saying that this is what she saw, and whether or not we, you know, think that there was maybe some added stuff from Ko or not, that is now, you know, when I hear
our
her
reality.
Yeah, that is now our reality of when I hear Katara talk about her mom, I will just reflect
that's
on that scene.
That's what I'm going to think about.
Yeah. So, fun fact about kids and trauma, because I know a lot about that,
is it doesn't, things don't have to happen to children for them to be traumatized by it. So whether or not Katara actually saw her mother being burned, she knew it happened, and children will fill in the gaps. So children can get traumatized by TV, by listening to horrible stories. It doesn't, they don't have to physically see it. Their mind will adapt and make it so. It's horrible, but like, that's why we have to be so sensitive around kids. And she was just a child. So like, even hearing her mother scream and hearing the fire burn, she could picture that in her mind. So like, this is probably her mind's eye of what happened.
Yeah. I like that theory. I like the sort of implication that Ko is, you know, sort of responsible for some of this a little bit. And we see him show up in the vision and he's scary. There's a jump scare. Like, I like the implication that, like, you know, sometimes the spirit world, especially the Fog of Lost Souls, is not this perfect memory. It's not like a true memory. Maybe it could be a little worse because you want to, you know, he's going to feed on this emotion and this terror and that sort of thing. And I like the idea that maybe he's manipulating it to make it worse.
I think, you know, looking back at it now, I would say that Ko, when he appears in both of their visions, he maybe is taking the place of something that actually happened within that vision as well. Like, it's not just that he just like shows up and like finds them. It's like, you know, she's underneath the table. Her mom gets burned alive. Yeah. I guarantee you they still found her, you know.
Somebody did.
They probably rounded up everybody. Oh. So like, part of her memory is like, that was a Fire Nation soldier who heard her scream and pulls her out. But now, and that's like the culmination of, or like the climactic moment of her memory is her mom getting burned alive and then she gets found. And instead of it being the Fire Nation soldier that finds her, now it's Ko's, you know, face.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that at all. I was totally picturing that. Well, one, Ko comes up like every single time as a jump scare.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. Me. Every single time.
Yeah, it's still very spider-like, right? Like he's a person, but it's still very spidery, you know, or centipede-like.
Yeah. I think that I'm kind of with you guys. I could see there's room for interpretation, I think, with Katara's story. And I think there's also room for interpretation in Sokka's story because, you know, we get to see Sokka relive not quite the trauma and horror, I guess, that...
It's a different trauma.
It is. It's a different trauma. That's what I'm saying. It's a different type of trauma. Like, it's the guilt to not living up to my father's expectations and, you know, am I good enough? Am I a man? Am I masculine? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of layers, I think, to Sokka's feelings about that. And I feel even more strong about the memory being possibly a false memory with Sokka's story than I even do with Katara. It's just like, did that actually happen? Was it actually depicted? Did it actually happen in that way where he stood outside the tent and he heard his father come out and talk trash about him with his friend? Like,
well, we know in the animated show this is not how this went at all. He never had an opportunity to do the trial at all when he was in the Water Tribe. He doesn't do the trial until they come across Bato on a beach.
Oh yeah.
And Bato's
do it.
Yeah. So yeah, is it a false memory? Are they rewriting the plot line to put Bato into it? I'm not sure.
Me either. I love that there's room for interpretation, though. I think that's what makes these types of moments in these shows interesting and thought-provoking. Is like, did this actually happen like that? Is this just Sokka getting in his own head? He's imagined that this is what everybody thought about him?
You guys have a lot more faith in parents and humanity than I do.
That's true. That's true.
I have heard parents say, like, innocent things, but to a child's ear, it is very not so innocent. It is very hurtful, and it's not meant to feel hurtful. So my guess is he probably did say something, but it wasn't, I don't trust my child. Maybe it was just, I thought he would do better. Maybe that's what he actually said, and it was interpreted as, I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. I saw one of my favorite comments that I saw online, though, was that I hope that the waterbenders of this live-action universe can use waterbending healing on, like, the mind, because they definitely all need some friggin' waterbending therapist after some of this stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding. I think it's cool Sokka still gets the Mark of the Wise.
Yep.
You know, So that still follows suit. I think if I have to choose a side of this ambiguity here of what's actually going on, I think this is a true memory. I think this memory actually happened, but I do think that it is altered in a way to make Sokka even more depressed and feel bad about it.
Yeah.
I like that as well.
But I like that we get to see Sokka's dad. I like that we get to see Bato. And overall, I think this is a good, more character development for him. We get to get to put faces to the names when we hear them talk about, you know, you're not dad. Well, who is dad? What does dad look like?
Yeah.
You know?
I agree with you, Alec. I think their dad is human, and I think he's doing the best he can, but he is human, and he might not be the best parent, but I think these memories are probably true, and they're the child's perspective of the memories.
Yeah.
Like, we see a sweater in the closet, and we think it's a monster. That's kind of that.
Well, and Sokka for the last few episodes has had moments with Sai and with Katara Sai's like, you know, you're an engineer. You're not, you know, maybe your dad doesn't see that in you, and, you know, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself. And Katara's like, you know, you had it harder than dad, but, you know, we get to see who dad is, what he means to the community, and to his people, what the pressures are and how young he is. I mean, he looks very, very young, you know, you know, especially to have kids already at Sokka and Katara's age. So in, you know, we get to see the actors playing those roles. We know that they're younger when those memories happen, but we still see them as whatever age that they are now in these visions. So, I thought it was good. Whether or not it's all real, probably not. But there's some truth in there for sure.
The last thing I want to say about Sokka is earlier in the episode, we had a couple little Easter eggs, which I think are fun little shout outs. He calls himself Pippin Papalopoulos or whatever, the third.
Yeah.
That was a fun little shout out. That's what Aang identifies himself as when they have disguises going into Omashu the first time they go in there. That was a fun little Easter egg. And then he also says Sokka, it rhymes with Akka. And he says that in the animated show in the haiku episode. It was the same little short story episode.
Nice.
You remember with...
Yeah.
Yeah, I forget. What was that episode called? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Tales of Ba Sing Se? Is that what it was called?
Maybe.
Something like that. But anyway, the little short story, the haiku thing was really fun. But he says that in the haiku shop, and I thought that was a fun little Easter egg. Well, since we're talking about Fog of Lost Souls, let's talk about someone who is a little more resistant to its power, and that was Aang, because I was not expecting kind of the little story we got about Aang in this episode, which was his reuniting with Gyatso.
Gyatso's alive,
apparently. I gotta say, that was very confusing initially. I know that we were supposed to understand that, like, he sees the air temple and he's like, nope, that's the Fog of Lost Souls. I'm not going in there. You know what I mean? But then he goes out and it's Gyatso, who also shouldn't be alive. And that transition was a little bit harsh. Maybe we're supposed to feel that. Maybe we're supposed to feel that Aang doesn't believe that it's real either.
Well, right? Yeah. I mean, so Aang's about to get thrown into the Ko memory, right? Which I assume is the Air Temple getting destroyed, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, but Aang wasn't there to experience that, right? So maybe this plays into your, like, are these memories real or not?
Yeah.
You know, because Aang doesn't have a memory of that, but he's been told about it. So this kind of goes into your psychology deal, too.
It actually could have been... his worst memory was probably being told that he was the Avatar.
Oh, man. That's good.
Yeah.
That's very good.
So that probably was it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because in the animated show, when he finds out he's the Avatar, he runs, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. He was really upset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What do you guys think about Gyatso being alive here? I mean, this was...
Gyatso built himself a Hagrid hut, you know?
Yes.
Straight up Hagrid hut.
I felt like I was in the Hufflepuff dorm room. It was like all
Hagrid's
nice
is,
and
Hagrid's
pleasant.
Is the place to be today. Yeah, I feel like it's the place to be.
Yeah. No, it was good, man. I mean, that's the scene is so wholesome. You know, I think one for the actor Gordon who plays Aang, I think his scenes with Gyatso are probably the ones that I enjoy the most. I think that he really resonates as a character when he gets to play across from Gyatso, and him starting on this path of, like, understanding that he has a lot of guilt and it's misplaced, and it doesn't belong. And Gyatso kind of helping him through that. He's like, I can't tell you how to be the Avatar, you know, but I can help you understand yourself and what you've been through.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny because Aang is like very shocked by that. He's like, what do you mean you can't tell me how to be the Avatar? Like, you told me I was the Avatar. And we never got to see that play out in reality.
No.
Yeah.
Because he ran away. So he probably did think that Gyatso was going to teach him.
And he sort of helps him in multiple ways here, I think Gyatso does. Because he says to Aang, he teaches him about, he encourages him to go find Roku's temple, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's moving the plot along. He kind of is a sort of a guide and for Aang a little bit. But I think the key message that we walk away from, because it feels like he very, very much forced it in, like he had to say it. He had to get it out, which is that he says, you couldn't have done anything, right? If you'd stayed with us, you would have been killed with all the other air nomads. It's not your fault. Like, that's the key message, and we end with that. And it feels, tell me if you guys felt the same way, it feels like it's sort of implied that this was the message that he needed to stay behind before moving on to enlightenment. This is the message that he needed to say to Aang before he could move on. And it feels to me like this is it. This is the last time we get to see Gyatso. He has to move on because he said the words, you know what I mean? He spoke the message that he was meant to stay behind and stay and say. And Aang says, "We'll see you next time." And he kind of looks at him and he's like,
It pulls at your heartstrings, like, man. It does.
Man.
It like gives you chills because you know that Aang is so hopeful that he'll get to see him again. But
this is closure, though, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, Gyatso hits the ending monologue for the episode with time is a funny thing, and it's and you're like, oh man, they're never going to see each other again. This is it. But he's fulfilled his mission. He stayed here, waiting for Aang for over 100 years, and it's finally come to fruition. So,
Man, that's heavy.
I'm gonna cry right now.
It is sad.
It's sad. I loved this scene. This is one of my favorite scenes with the actor.
Gyatso is probably one of the most wholesome parent figures in this entire show right now. Mm-hmm. Like, he does everything very perfectly. Mm-hmm. He, like, gentle parents, he's encouraging to Aang, he's goofy, he plays with them. Like, we're losing a wonderful character.
Well, yeah. And I think, they don't really show it, I don't think, in the live action, but in the animated, we see that the other air nomads are mad at Gyatso. Like, they're like, why are you babying him so much? Why are you keeping, like, he needs to be forced into adulthood. Mm-hmm. And
he's like, we can't tell him until he's 16.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The contrast with Bumi, too, from the previous episode. Bumi is angry and bitter.
Yeah.
And, Gyatso is the only person we've really met so far that is like, no, Aang, you can do this. You're talented and successful, and it's going to be great, and you can handle the weight of all this on your shoulders. And also, it's not your fault that this was given to you. And it's a heavy burden to bear, but you can do it.
Yeah.
That's like...
Well,
it's good. It's a good guide message to have.
Gyatso doesn't put the pressure on him that everybody else is.
Yeah.
100%. 100%. Well, the last couple of things that I wanted to talk about briefly in this episode that we haven't talked about yet, which is sort of Zuko and Iroh in June, right? We get another fan favorite character from the animated show. There's some humorous moments in there. But before we kind of talk about June really fast, we do need to hear from this week's sponsor of the show. We will be right back. Hello, friends. We're taking a short break from the show to talk to you about our vibrant Patreon and Discord community, which we call The United. The United is the heart of the Uteeniverse, where fans of Star Wars, nerd culture, and even sports unite. It's all about diving deep into the fandoms we love with a spirit of passion and positivity alongside other fans who share those same values. Now on Patreon, you'll find an exclusive world of content. From behind-the-scenes peeks at our YouTube channel productions to ad-free versions of all of our podcasts alongside other insider updates. It's really your all-access pass to what goes on behind the curtain and on the team at Uteeni. But the United is more than just content. It's a community. With features designed to bring us closer, we're building a space where every fan has a voice. As we look to the future, your feedback and involvement will shape the direction of the United. So this is really your chance to be part of a community that's at the heart of our mission, fostering a sense of belonging that's essential for every fan. If you're ready to join the United, head over to our site, utini.com, to find our Discord, or to patreon.com/utini to jump into Patreon. Let's make this community stronger together and dive into a world where your passion for fandom becomes a shared adventure. Now, let's get back to the show. All right, folks, we are back. Thanks for that quick break. Let's talk about June a little bit because fantastic characterization, I think. Everyone will agree. She's scary. She's kind of a badass. She flirted with Iroh, which was hilarious. I do like that they flipped that around. This is a small note, but they flipped it around because in the show, Iroh like flirted with her. And it was kind of a creepy old man flirting with a younger woman kind of vibe. But this one was the other way around. He was like, She's like, I'll accept it because your dad's cute.
Yeah. Your dad's kind of cute.
Yeah. That was pretty fun. I also want to say that the creatures continue beautiful. To be awesome. What's that? I don't know what that thing's name is.
Nala.
Yes.
Yeah. That's his name. I've no idea what the creature is. It's terrifying.
I love it. I've always thought it was an interesting her character, especially in the sense that she dresses very much like a Fire Nation. I feel like she's one of those people, like, she's like, I was born Earth Kingdom, but I am not Earth Kingdom. Like,
yeah,
like
right.
Those are not my people.
It's not a phase, Mom. Yeah. I'm actually goth.
Oh my gosh, get out.
Well, I mean, both of her parents were very well-known thieves. So, like, her history is that her mom was a notorious thief in the Earth Kingdom amongst the nobles. Like, she stole stuff from the nobles constantly. And as a child, she traveled with her dad around a lot, just, like, kind of going in and out of all the kingdoms, stealing and kind of making their way around. And she's had Nala since she was a teen. So her and Nala have been working together for a long time.
Yeah, it says, the wiki says that Nala is a shershu.
Yes. It's like an anteater thing.
Wolf thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really terrifying. The paralyzing tongue is...
it was great. It was depicted great.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was perfect.
She was like, don't die.
I know.
You dummy.
Don't die. You're worthless to me if you're dead. I also love the little Easter eggs with, you know, when Zuko and Iroh first go to that little village and they go in and he's terrible at negotiating. Alec, I remember you saying that.
Oh, yeah, before. Man. He's like sliding the stuff across. You know, and this is something too, I didn't touch on the last episode, but we really haven't seen Zuko in situations where he's not like the Fire Lord's son. You know, now we have two episodes in a row where he's put himself in a situation. The last episode, he was in the middle of the prison and the guy kind of gives him like a, what are you going to do? Like, you know,
and he's
trying to impersonate and he's like, you know, really struggling to find the words. He doesn't know what to say to the guy. And now we see him and he's trying to negotiate with this very large man who, you know, runs a bar, you know.
And, did you see any waterbenders? Right,
you
here?
See, and he's like... Nope. You know, his hand's shaking and he's trying to slide the gold across.
He doesn't have the privilege of being royalty and respected.
Yeah, but he has to earn it. But I appreciate that Iroh is letting him learn. Like, Iroh doesn't just come in and like take over. He's like, all right, you're gonna see how this works
sometimes.
Now.
Yeah.
We also get to see Zuko be awful though at the same time and like make lots of mistakes. I loved the moment on the ship. It's like, so someone saw ice where there is no ice. Isn't that a little unusual? And the guy doesn't say anything. He's like, yes, it would be, unless you were an idiot. That was fantastic.
Yeah, he's still a kid. And he's still a kid.
Yes, yeah. And Iroh was just like, oh, God.
Like, he's like, that's not how you talk to your soldiers.
I know. The cameo of the other folks in the bar, too, where he's like, yeah, I saw some waterbenders. They were with the Avatar. Hey, right, isn't the Avatar you guys saw him, right? He's like, no, I heard he was with the Canyon guy, and I heard he was with the pirates. Like,
yeah,
all
the
little
pirates.
Yeah.
So can we assume that the stuff that we haven't seen in the first season are all, is this stuff all happening off screen? It's canon
maybe.
Now that the Canyon thing
I think this kind of throws the whole timeline kind of weird because now I'm looking at Aang's storyline every time we go to him, and I'm like, when did you do these things? When did this stuff happen? Did we just miss like a crap ton of character development that we have no idea like what you went through?
I mean, I will be very glad to pass up the Canyon episode with that.
Those people suck.
Awful. Well, yeah. The awful like legend of the ball and the orb. and it turned out to be two toddlers playing a game. Yes, it was just dumb.
But then the end of that episode, and Katara is like, wow, Aang, how did
that
you?
That was so good.
What are the odds that you knew that? And he's like, what are you talking about? I just made that shit up, bro.
Yeah.
I just made that up. That was not true. Yeah. I just wanted to make these people chill out. I was like, man, that was hilarious.
Yeah. That was, again, plays really well in a one-off episode in the animated series.
Yes, yes, yes.
Would not do well with the show. So,
agreed.
I get it.
100%.
I get it. It's all fan service. I'm not going to think too hard about it anymore.
I did read an interesting fact this week that I was going to bring up, is that the runtime of the animated show is quite close to the full runtime of the live action show.
Really? Well, I guess that makes sense. Yes. There's a lot of commercial
the
breaks
episodes
and
are all,
intros and outros.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The episodes are all about 22 minutes each, and
combine
them all together, the runtime is very close to what it is for the live action show. So it makes you kind of ask some questions a little bit about, like, going from animation to live action. It's not purely a time situation. It's not purely they only have 8 episodes. That's not the only problem, right? There's a lot of challenges from going from live action to animation, or the other way around, that, like, you know, you have a lot of kind of freedoms with animation that you don't have with live action.
Yeah,
so you can imply a lot.
The pacing is so different.
It is, but it has to be, I think.
Yeah, agreed. So, agreed.
Yeah, 100%. I do like that, going back to Iroh and Zuko, I loved the Paisho kind of coming in. He used that as like a lesson. And like explained to Zuko that, like, sometimes you have to do the unexpected. Zhao is. He's doing it, right?
Yeah.
It's like he's on the move. He's moving pieces before we even take our pieces out or something like that. Like,
oh, we didn't even mention that. Those weird women soldiers deliver something.
The archers.
Oh,
With the Batman mask on their eyes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Little bat women archers.
What's happening there? What orders did he get? Were they from Ozai or were they from Azula? Who are they from?
It was from Ozai. Ozai says that. Azula says you should soup up
Zhao
because he's a loyal soldier and all this stuff.
It's like the Witches of Dathomir. Like,
oh, yeah.
that's like the vibe it gave me. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Clearly gets a promotion. It sounds like they're setting up Zhao to be a bigger character later on, which I guess in the anime show, that's who goes to the, water tribe and tries to kill them all.
Yeah, I think we could safely assume we'll see Zhao and the water tribe when we get there.
All right, folks, we are rounding out to the end of the episode here. I do want to give us all a chance to kind of throw in some Flying Cal, Sokka Snacks, MVPs, as we always do. I will go first, I guess. Sokka Snack. I think my favorite Sokka Snack was the inclusion of Ko in all of the individual visions. I love the ambiguity that it creates. Mm-hmm. I know we talked about that a lot during this episode, but I love the ambiguity of, like, oh, he's here in the vision. I love that it gives it a little room for debate about what we're actually seeing. I think that makes it really fun. I think it's one of the best ways, the most fun ways to participate in a fandom like this is to where there's room for interpretation of what's happening on screen. And it makes you think, and I'm a big fan of that. So I will say that is my Sokka snack for this episode. I'll have to think about a Flying Cow if I even had one. I'll have to think about it.
I have two, so I want you to go first, Kat.
Okay. Oh, my Sokka snack is probably Gyatso. The whole scene with Gyatso is just so rich, and like when he's leaving, I think is my favorite moment, because Gyatso is like trying very hard to appreciate, and like he misses Aang. Mm-hmm. He does, but he also knows that he's going to leave.
100%. Alec, what about you?
All right, I'm going to give two here. One is we've seen some episodes now where characters are getting called on their shit, and Sokka gets his this time with the fox. When she says, "Do you always make jokes when you don't want to talk?" That's like, man, that is literally his character throughout this entire show. So, speaking of which, what did you guys think of the fox? Did you like that character?
I was a big fan of the fox.
Super excited about the fox.
I want to talk about the minor spoiler. I think I want to do it anyway.
Okay.
There's a minor spoiler here, sort of a spoiler, sort of a not spoiler. If you're super anti spoilers, you don't want to know anything about the rest of the show, then hit the fast forward button and skip forward like 15 seconds. We know that Yue is in the show because we saw her in the trailer, and she's wearing a headband on in her hair, like there's a hairband metal thing, and that is the same band that we see on the fox's tail. And the camera lingers on it, and you're meant to go, huh, that was kind of weird. Why did it show that? And that's why.
Why does the spirit have a band?
I don't know. Yeah. Does this mean that?
Is it actually Yue?
Is the fox?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Is she a fish and a fox? Okay.
But to answer your question, yes, the fox was really cool. The voice actors did a great job. What's that called? That creature is called something.
I think it's called a kitsune. It reminds me of the Pokemon Ninetales or Vulpix.
Yeah. Very,
which I think
very
is what it's
Vulpix,
based off of. Is like kitsune.
The other soccer snack that I had is Gyatso's monologue at the end. It felt very theatrical, very movie like, not like a TV show move, but I don't think we've seen this kind of thing yet, really. But you get like this narration, and as he's talking, the monologue is about Aang and about what Aang's going through, but it reflects on different characters and where they're currently at in the show as well. So, like, while he's talking, we're getting cutscenes of, you know, like, he says, sometimes, you know, we feel like our only company is our own pain. And and it flashes to Zuko, you know? Sometimes we feel like we'll always be alone. Sometimes we feel like we ourselves are the problem. And it flashes to Azula. So, you know, this monologue that we get at the end, I think is...
I forgot about that.
Probably my favorite ending to an episode so far. It probably really helps me feel like this is my favorite episode so far, just in the way that it ends. But that monologue really, really...
That's a good point.
...really ended the show on such a high note.
It did feel like a kind of that mid-season finale vibe, right?
Yeah.
The show ends. I think the last shot is like Aang's knuckles gripping the glider.
Yeah.
Whatever with the voiceover was beautiful. That was awesome. I agree. I forgot about that. That's a good point. Good shout out.
I don't think I even noticed it because it was so smooth.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I don't really think I have a lot of, I don't think I have a flying cow, truly. I don't think I do. I love this episode. It was a lot of fun.
I will say one flying cow just so I have one, but it's not really a big deal. We've seen a few episodes now, but they keep putting Aang in these situations where he's doing these monologues by himself.
I noticed it this time. You pointed that out one time before, I think, and
I think we were talking like off pod about it, but it's a little weird, and I feel like it's a tough stretch for Gordon because he is such a young actor, but he doesn't look at the camera. He's not really like talking to anyone. And
I think it is I think it's an editing mistake.
Yeah.
It's probably a
post-production mistake.
Yes. I think that they've shot these scenes differently than how we're seeing them on screen. So specifically the one that I'm thinking of is when he's when he's seeing the forest and he's looking off into the forest. He's obviously looking at a green screen. It's the volume, I think. And he's looking at the green screen and you see him talking, you see his shoulders shrugging and stuff like he's talking. And then it shows him, and he's like looking around with this weird monologue, and the camera is front facing. I think that weirdness of him looking at the camera front facing thing, I think that's from a different scene that they shot where he's actually talking to other people. And then they've used it to make it look like
a monologue. Like they don't frame Katara up correctly, so that she is in his eyesight.
I think it's just weird editing.
Yeah, I mean it's so expensive to film in that volume, and I'm sure that they've, you know, like. Pretty much every movie ever made is going to have, like, once they wrap and they do their final wrap, some of the actors are going to have to come back and do a few scenes, you know, because in the editing phase, they're going to change some things up. They're going to realize that it doesn't flow well and they need a couple scenes done. It's very normal, but I don't know how difficult that is to do when you're trying to schedule the volume in your shots. Yeah.
Cost $1 million a day. Or
It's like, is it worth it or can we just...
We'll fix it in post, you know?
Yeah.
All right, I changed my mind. I do have a very small flying cow. It's the fact that Aang just left their bodies laying there on the ground. And they're
actively... To be protected by Momo and Appa.
They're being chased by the Fire Ninjas. You'll leave them there? Good Lord, my guy. Like,
yeah.
Okay, that's also part of my flying cow is I'm mad that they set it up so perfectly in the beginning going into the spirit world of Katara
Sokka's like, what do we do now? And Katara's like, well, we protect his body. And then they suddenly get catapulted into the spirit world. Like, what's happening to all their bodies right now?
Yes, and also Aang's body is still in the meditating position.
Yeah.
And they realize that they're in the spirit world and they're standing inside their bodies, basically. And then they're like, wait, how did this happen?
They're like,
then
flopped over.
But then they look over and their bodies are very nicely positioned against the rock. And it is a sudden cut.
It's like nicely. Did they like fall and like bash their head? You know, or are they like both concussed?
I know. And we see it. Like, it's a split second too where they're standing and then suddenly they're not. That was kind of weird editing as well. So a couple weird editing mistakes, but you know, it's Netflix TV. What can you do? MVP, really quick. Let's hit that one really fast. Mine is easy. It's Kiyotsu, 100%. I thought he absolutely made the episode.
I want to have somebody different from you, so I don't want to give it to Kiyotsu. Mm-hmm. I think I'll just give mine to the scene between like Azula and Ozai, and kind of how that dynamic is going.
Still Ozai? Is he still the MVP?
I'm
giving him a lot of Ozai.
I think I'm going to give it to Azula for this one, but both of them in that whole scene gets an MVP.
Nice.
Okay, I'm glad y'all chose that because mine is going to be Ko.
Ko. Yeah.
Ko was depicted so well, and he's so freaking creepy that I think he's perfect. He did very, very well.
I agree.
I'm a big fan of.
I think if I was ranking our MVPs, you would be number one because Ko, Ko is incredible.
Oh, he just gives me the.
Oh numbers. Yeah, 100%. I hope we see more Ko, but it definitely gives me that like scared vibe.
Oh yeah,
100%. 100%. That's going to do it for this week's episode of the Utini Avatar Show. If you are looking for other fun shows, be sure to check out the rest of our lineup in the Utini Network. We're having a blast with this show, and I hope you guys are too. I do want to give a special thank you to some of our patrons, Brian Dooley, Carl Sander, Michael Fry, Raymond Bazinski, all in our High Council tier, James T., Ashley Ingalls, Colton Five, and Chris Carrizo at our Captain tier. Thank you guys for your very awesome support. Let's keep the party going. Jump over into our Discord. We have some channels over there. There's an Avatar Netflix channel. We can continue the conversation with other Utenians. And huge shout out to our behind-the-scenes folks, right? We got Kyle for making us sound good, my fellow host for juggling all the things, and Wes for the Utini Network support. That's going to be it for us. Keep exploring. Keep sharing. Let's keep having a great time together with this awesome fandom, and we will catch you next week. Support for this show and all Utini Network podcasts comes from the United Patreon community. At the heart of the Uteniverse, the United is where our most passionate fans gather to deepen their journey through the worlds of Avatar, Star Wars, and the broader universe of nerd culture and sports. By joining the United on Patreon, you gain access to an exclusive realm filled with content that takes you behind the scenes of our YouTube channel, provides ad-free listening of all of our podcasts, and offers regular insider updates. More than just a content hub, United is a vibrant community. Through organized events, we create connections, fostering a space where every voice is heard and valued. By becoming part of the United, you're not just supporting us, you're enhancing a community dedicated to celebrating and exploring our passions together. To start your journey, visit patreon.com/utini. Together, we can build a stronger community, united by our love for these incredible fandoms. Thank you for your support, and remember, the adventure continues in every episode of The Avatar Show and across all Utini Network podcasts.